You're listening to Trucking with Authority with Kenny Long. Now is the best time in a long time to take the leap and become a motor carrier. We'll dispel the rumors, teach you how to avoid the scams, take your questions, and give you the tools you need to get your own authority and get the success you deserve. Let's head down the audio road and start trucking with authority.
Welcome to the program. This is Trucking with Authority. I'm your host, Kenny Long. For the next hour, consider me your navigator on your journey to success. Tonight, we will be talking about making a sale, closing the deal. And even more than that, how do you get started in the negotiation, get started in the haggling process? Many of us start backwards. We work from haggling, start with money, and we skip over some of the most important parts of the whole process. And tonight we will talk about that, because many times, especially in the trucking industry, drivers, carriers don't even realize what they're missing, because it's a cookie cutter operation that we've been put into. We do the same thing over and over and over. We've been brought up in the industry, working with agents, working with brokers, working with a dispatcher. We think everything's already set for us. But if you really want to succeed in business, you have to find a different path. You have to try something new. That's what we're talking about today. Most drivers, carriers, dispatchers in the trucking business jump right to haggling. We jump right into talking about the money. And that's not the best way to go about it. There's several processes to starting a sale, to closing a deal. Most of us know that you can look on a load board, find a broker that's got a load, call about it, and you just immediately start talking about money. Most of us feel more comfortable talking about money first, and most of us would rather call in loads that have that money, that the rate offered, already published on the load board. The question is why? Why do we jump to that dollar figure? Why do we skip the processes that lead us up to that? And I'm intentionally not saying what those processes are, but there's a lot more that leads up to haggling over the money. Now, I've done shows about negotiation, and negotiation is certainly a part of it. That's a step in the right direction up to the haggling over money. And I've mentioned before that you can always talk money last. You always leave that dollar figure to the very end. It's the last thing you talk about. You need all the details because you need something to negotiate on. But there's steps even before you get to a negotiation, and that's really what we're going to talk about today. Those are the types of things that really could set us apart as independent businesses, really make us different than the rest. We've talked about finding a niche, finding something you're good at and specializing in it. But how does your customer know that? You can't just call up and start haggling over money if you haven't explained to your customer what your niche is, unless you expect your customer to find you somehow, which is another part of this. Tonight, we can talk about anything from getting started in the business as a driver all the way up through pulling freight as a carrier. We can talk about becoming an owner-operator, getting that first truck. We can talk about moving into dealing with FMCSA, filling out the contracts, the rules, regulations, compliance. We can talk about record keeping, insurance. We can talk about dealing with brokers, sales and negotiations, which is a big part of what we're talking about today. We can talk about the haggling aspect, tips, tricks, things that will improve the revenue to the truck, improve your bottom line, to improve the bottom line by pushing hard to make sure that top line figure is everything that we want it to be. So if you have any questions or comments, call the show now. And it looks like our phone numbers have been toggled back and forth here. We will be streaming live on Facebook in a few moments, if it will connect. If you have any questions or comments to add to the show today, press number one on your keypad. We will be taking your calls. Your calls are what make this show great. Any questions you have, any comments you want to add, go ahead and press number one. We have been crunched for time here today at the office, so we don't have a phone screener. Elizabeth usually handles the calls for me, and she's actually out on the road making a delivery today. She's on her way back. Couldn't make it back in time, so I'm on my own. I will be calling out your name. Well, I'll be calling out your area code. We don't have a call screener tonight. So press 1, listen for the area code, and I will bring you on the air for any questions you may have. Now, there are 4 major stages making a deal, making a sale. Most people in this industry skip to the end, skip right past the important parts. And the reason being is it's the easiest way to do it. Skipping to the money is the easiest way because that means somebody else has already done the hard work. Somebody else has already made the deal. Somebody else has already figured out what the numbers should be. Somebody else has already negotiated with the final end user. Somebody else has put together all the details. Somebody else is looking out for their business first. And in our business, we expect somebody else to do the work for us. Most of you are thinking, well, that's not how it works in my business. But let me ask you this. When was the last time you called on a load, got a few details, and just immediately started negotiating a rate? Never introduced yourself, never explained what your services are. You simply got the details of the load and went right to jumping on a rate. You might have waited till the last point. The last thing you talked about may have been that rate, which is textbook, but you skipped the steps ahead of that. So again, go ahead and press 1 on your keypad if you have anything to add on this. I'm trying to configure the videos to go live streaming on Facebook here. It looks like we'll be up and running on that side in a moment. So any of you that are listening, if you can... For any of you that are listening, if you can go to the Facebook stream and share that around, I would appreciate it. Again, I am alone here in the studio trying to make all this happen. We have been just absolutely swamped lately. Freight is, it's moving, but it's a lot more work to make it happen. So again, go ahead and we are live on Facebook now. If you're going to watch the stream on Facebook, call 563-999-3001. Again, the number is 563-999-3001. So again, there are 4 major components to a sale. I will read them off backwards. Where most people in this industry start, number 4 is haggling over the money. Most people start there. Number 3, counting down, is the negotiation. Some people start there, or at least they think they do. They try to. Number 2, somebody should be making some sales calls and explaining what you have to offer. And number 1 is marketing. Now, those are in order of importance. 1, marketing. 2, sales. 3, negotiation. And 4, haggling. And why do I say that they're in that order? Because the better you are in those categories in that order, the more likely it is you are to make a sale and get the price and the conditions that you want. Now, some of you might be scratching your head. What do I mean by that? Part of my show today is to get you out of your comfort zone, to get you thinking about the process that you're going through. I've asked carriers in the past how many sales calls they make every week or every month. The question usually gets an answer of maybe 1 or maybe 0. I can tell you on the other side, brokers, typically make 40 to 50 calls, fresh, new contacts, new calls every single day. In addition to those 40 or 50 calls they make every single day, they are following up on past leads. We've gone over some of the numbers. On cold calls, the yes ratio on a typical cold call is less than 2%. Less than 2 out of 100 will be a yes. In this industry, I think it's actually even less than that. So brokers may make one or two sales every day or two. Carriers, drivers, truckers complain like crazy that the brokers are taking everything off the top of the load. The brokers aren't doing anything to earn it. The brokers are the ones that are raking the carriers over the coals. The brokers are the ones that are sitting there in their underwear with a phone and a fax machine. They don't do anything. But as I started out this whole dialogue, carriers call them with the idea in their mind that they want to just start talking about money. They haven't done the work. They've asked somebody else to do the work for them. The deal's already set up. Now, because this industry is so set in its ways, because this industry is a majority of backwards thinking, all of the processes that we go through, the service provider is not the one setting the deal, setting the rate. The service provider is not the one providing the contract. Everything in this industry is backwards. In other industries, for example, if you were to take your four-wheeler, your car to a mechanic, that mechanic is the end user or the service provider. The mechanic sets the rates. Typically, you walk in and they have a big board behind the counter that tells you what their rates are. Now, if you go into some of these places, I know most of you have been on the road, you've taken your truck into the TA, the Petro. They've got that big board behind them. We walk in, we just lay down our credit card, pay the price. Companies like that, these big multi-million dollar chains, have already done the hard work. And they got you to come to them. And without any negotiation, without any haggling, you gave them your money. How did they do that? Why is it that on our end, the carrier side, when we're looking to book a load, we jump right into haggling over money? We don't demand a rate. We don't have set prices. And they're not coming to us typically. We're going to them. If they do come to us, it's because we posted our truck on a load board, which essentially is we're making first contact. We're putting our name up there on a list that says we're available. Call me. Why is that? Why is this industry so backwards? That's something that we need to, as an industry, as carriers, need to figure out. How can we fix that? And understanding the process of how a sale, an agreement, a transaction works is the first step. If you have any questions or comments, anything you'd like to add to this, go ahead and press 1. If you have any questions or comments about getting your own authority, getting set up with insurance, getting your first truck, if you have any questions about how much money you have to get started in this business, we can talk about all of these things. We'll touch on some of that. These are some of the questions I get throughout the week. You can also find us at letstruck.com. Click the link to Audio Road. You can find this show and all the past recorded shows. We've got hundreds of hours of content now. I typically do at least an hour. We usually go an hour and 15 to an hour and 20 minutes, sometimes an hour and a half here in the show. And every Tuesday, we've been doing this for going on 3 years now. So there's a lot of content. If you have any questions that don't get answered on the air with this show, if you have any questions about sales, negotiations, quoting a load, knowing your numbers, getting your own authority, press 1 now and we'll answer it tonight. And if you need more detail, certainly go back and listen to the recorded shows. You can also find all of the other Audio Road Network shows, Rico Muhammad's show, Rates and Lanes, tomorrow on Wednesday. His recorded shows, his call-in numbers and times are also listed. Trucking 101 will now be on Thursday nights with Melissa Grimm. at 8 p.m. on Thursday nights. Again, her number is listed there as well. Kevin Rutherford has many shows listed there as well, along with Kim Cockerham with Destination Health, and Mike and Kevin Beckett on Sunday nights with Rolling Toe. All of those shows recorded, and the call-in numbers for the live recordings are listed at letstruck.com. Click the link to the audio road. Now, if you're watching on Facebook, if you're watching the stream, you might notice that I've got this bright green screen behind me, and that should be an indication of some things to come. I've been working hard in the studio, I'm calling it now. The office has turned into a studio. I am working on putting together some videos. I've been promising a YouTube channel for some time now, and I'm working on putting some things together. I will have some content released here this week. So stay tuned for that. You'll be able to find the links. I'll post all that on Facebook as it becomes available. By next week, I should have a few videos up. I'll be adding quite a few little tips and tricks as we go, and we'll be doing some longer shows once we get up and running with that. Again, if you're listening on the show, we've got some questions already coming in. Press 1 on the keypad, and we will get you on the air. Let me take a couple phone calls, and we'll get back to the topic of the day. Go to 630, area code 630. Welcome to the show. Are you on?
Yep, I'm here.
How can we help you?
Hello. Hey, Kenny, I wanted to just thank you. I've been listening to you since the beginning, and I've had my own authority about, just coming up on the two-year mark now, and it's all because of you and your show. So I wanted to start out by thanking you for that.
That's awesome. Thank you. I'm glad I could help.
I'm trying to figure out how to switch my drug consortium. The company that I started off with in the beginning was, they were really charging me quite a bit, and I was going to switch over to Nastic, and I'm wondering how to do the transition.
Okay. All right. How many drivers do you have? Is it just yourself?
Just me.
Well, I don't know what consortium you're with now, but the first thing you need to do is just get the records for any testing that you may have had done since you started. So you just need to have that on file. You need to have that with your driver's file. Make sure you have all the records and make sure that you have the driver's list from the company you're with now with dates on it to make sure that if you are audited, you can prove that you are a part of this consortium going back to day one. Then all you need to do is call up the new company, get enrolled. Once you're enrolled in that one, call the old company and tell them you want to drop it. That's really all there is to it. You don't need to worry about doing a new drug test for them. You've already done pre-employment. You've already been in a random selection. And when you enroll in the new consortium, they'll just add you to the list as a new driver.
Log into FMCSA. Do I need to update anything?
You don't need to change anything.
Concerned? Okay.
There is nothing on that side that you need to change. There's no, as far as being enrolled in a consortium, there is nothing that you have to file with FMCSA. You just have to be able to prove, if you are ever audited, you have to be able to prove that you have always been enrolled. That's why I say
right.
The first thing you need to do is get your driver's list with dates and a history to make sure that you can show that you've been enrolled this entire time approved program, and then switch to the new program, and everything just rolls over. You just start fresh with the new one and just drop the old one. If you are ever audited, so if you're audited next year and they want to see that you've been enrolled in this program, you need to make sure that you have that list available. Other than that, there's nothing ever to file.
Okay. That's kind of what I thought. I would just wanted to double check. So one other thing I wanted to throw out there, I've heard a lot of guys calling in and asking about getting their own authority and what would, they ask, you know, is it really worth it and blah, blah, blah. In my experience, it's been absolutely worth it. But I will say that my rates, they actually went down a little bit just because the carrier that I was leased to before, they had some longtime customers that, you know, they were getting some really good rates on some of the lanes they were moving. So me being a one truck, one man show, I've struggled to get as good of rates, but then, you know, not having that, percentage go to the carrier, and having the freedom. I mean, I just love it.
Well, let's talk about that for a minute. Obviously, the freedom is huge. There's a big carrier out there that leases on owner-operators. It's all self-dispatch, and they try to promise freedom. But until you are completely on your own, you don't know what freedom is. And absolutely, once you get on your own, do what you want, when you want. But as far as the rates, let's talk about that for a moment. First of all, as a brand-new carrier, when you're in your first few months, you need to understand that you will have to take some lower rates possibly to establish yourself right off the bat when you're working with brokers. Because brokers will just assume work with somebody that's more established. They'll just call the next guy online. And unfortunately, that's kind of the point of the show tonight, is that we're just a commodity out here. When you're on a load board and you're working specifically and solely with brokers, you're just another truck. One thing I think it's a very difficult mindset, and I'm actually trying to work through some of this. I'm working through some of this now with some of my drivers, and the mindset is that they want to just keep moving, and they want to book a load ahead of time. They want to have everything laid out, which, depending on the business model and depending on the market. Certainly, when it's a slower market, it's a good idea to probably book ahead of time. You won't be sitting around. If you book a load into, say, Florida, try to book something out of there right away, because you know if you get down there and you can't find anything, you're deadheading out, or make a plan to do that ahead of time. But once you're established, set your rates firm. Now, one thing to keep in mind is brokers and customers, they track what you do. So let's say you work for a broker A and you're in a good market. You don't stand firm on your rates because you just want to keep moving. You want to book ahead of time. You don't stand firm. And you book something for average rates or below market rates. And then you wonder why the next time you're in that area, you have a hard time struggling to get out of there and make a decent dollar. So I can show you, well, I can't show you, but I can tell you that, on some of these brokers, their internal software, when they pull you up, and I'm sure you've heard every single carrier, the first thing they do before they even discuss load details is they ask for your MC number or your DOT number, and they pull your account up, make sure you're set up.
Yep.
And one of the reasons that they do that, especially the bigger ones, when they pull you up, in the top corner of their screen, it will show your average rates. It will show average miles that you run. It will show, you know, basics of it'll show the analytics of the loads that you've pulled and the basic rates that you've worked with. And if you haven't been strict on your rates in the past, it'll be very difficult to get good rates out of them in the future. So that's one thing not to set a precedent with some of these brokers. If you know you're in a good market and they just won't budge, you really need to do everything and negotiate hard to make sure that you get the rates that you know are coming out of that area. There have been times when I know the market is paying $3 or $4 a mile for some lanes, and I'm seeing drivers still booking it for $1.50, $1.75, because that's just what they've been doing for the past few months. But the market has changed. They have to stay on top of that. And that's something that I'm trying to work on with my drivers, actually, that are leased onto me, just trying to stay firm and push for higher rates. Overall, certainly as long as you're making money, you know, you can continue running with the lower rates, but if the rates are available, you might as well do it. That's kind of the name of the game with spot market freight and working with brokers. Now, the other side of that, though, is if you were leased to a carrier that had some history with customers, they probably had a lot of direct freight. It's difficult in some ways to get direct freight with a one-truck carrier, but it's not impossible. I have, before I even brought on a second truck, I had a few direct customers. There's been some direct customers that were in just off-the-wall places. You wouldn't even believe there was a business there. Brokers are trying to move freight for, you know, a dollar a mile. And, I wasn't able to do great out of there, but I was able to do a dollar, you know, $40, $50 a mile out of that same area because I was able to get it direct. I guess the point here is don't rely completely on the load board. Maybe I'll talk a little bit on a future show about how you can try to find some direct freight, even if you don't have a direct customer. But just to touch on that a little bit, if you're in especially small town America and you're looking on the load board and there's some freight moving and you know it's possibly four or five different brokers on it, it's fairly easy in these small towns. Call some of these brokers, try to figure out what the customer is. And especially if there's multiple brokers posting the same load, you can probably find that customer direct, and they will work with you. And I've done that many times. So trying to get stuff direct is one way to try to improve your rates. And that's one thing that the big carriers have over the small guys is they've got salespeople everywhere. They know they can commit and promise to a direct customer that they can cover them because they have the capacity. And the disadvantage to being a small truck carrier is that you don't have the capacity, but one thing you do have is the flexibility, and the owner of the company, the owner of the truck, the owner of everything, the one that will be handling every aspect of the load is the one that will actually pick it up, be there, handle it, you know, in person. And some of the small mom and pop type places prefer that over a phone call and, 6 degrees of separation between the person they talk to on the phone and somebody that's picking up the load. So the opportunities are out there to improve your rates. Stand firm, understand your costs, understand what you need to make, set your bottom dollar, and work hard. That's really what my show is tonight. I'll get back to the main topic. Work hard on selling your business, selling yourself.
Yeah.
Get out of your comfort zone and don't rely specifically on load boards. You know, call some of these brokers. Even if you want to work just specifically with brokers, call them. You know, call one of these main offices that you might work with all the time. Introduce yourself. Tell them what you can offer. If you have some type of a niche, explain what your niche is. Don't call just to talk about a specific load. Call to just introduce yourself. Get on a mailing list. A lot of these brokers will send out emails of the most important and best paying loads they have before they're posted on a load board. But they only do that to the people that they already know and that are established. So there's about 1,000 different tips and tricks I could tell you to try to get your rates up. But certainly I think if you focus on getting away from load boards and again and trying to set yourself apart a little bit, that would definitely help.
Awesome. Yeah. Like I say, I sure appreciate all the info and I'll go back on hold so you can get to the next guy.
All right. I appreciate the call. We'll jump down to area code 949. Welcome to the show.
I've seen they put me by itself on an ad script, but I don't have a question. Sorry about it.
Let me turn your volume up a little bit here. What was that again? Could you repeat that?
The system put me on a question. I did not press one. Sorry about it.
Oh, okay. Got it. Okay. All right, I will put you back on hold. Anybody has any questions or comments, go ahead and press one now. We're going to get back to the main topic. Now, in the beginning, I mentioned the four main points of a sale, an agreement. And that is number one, marketing. Number two, sales. Number three, the negotiation. And number four, And finally, haggling over the money. And I want to stress that most of us in this industry jump right to haggling over the money. Some of us try to actually negotiate, but your negotiation borderlines haggling typically. So let's talk about how and why we should get better at marketing. And then how and why we should get better at sales. First of all, I mentioned that if you go into the TA, you just throw your credit card on the table and you pay whatever they ask. Why is that? Because they have done an excellent job marketing. You may or may not like their services, but you are there. Why are you there? Because there, and most of the time there's another shop around the corner somewhere, but you don't know where it is. TA has done an excellent job marketing. Every truck that's on the road can find a TA Petro shop. So they do fantastic, you know, they do large amounts of business. That might be a better word. They do a lot of business. So their marketing campaign, their marketing money, and everything they've put into just getting their brand out there has paid off. They can skip over trying to sell you on their services. They can skip over negotiating on what they may or may not be able to offer you, and they can skip over haggling. You drive in sometimes, I've got drivers that have driven hundreds of miles to get to a TA or Petro shop because it's the only thing you could find on their route, because it's the only thing in their GPS or the only thing on the map that they can find easily. You drive hundreds of miles to get there, just throw the credit card down because the shop has done a lot of marketing. Advertisements everywhere. You know what they offer just from their advertisements. At no point do you have to walk in and listen to a sales pitch from them. Their marketing strategy has been fantastic. And most of the big corporations have a huge amount of money they can dump into marketing, which just makes them bigger and stronger. But just think about how you could get your name out there, how you could get customers to come to you without a sales pitch, without negotiating, and just give you whatever you need. It can be done. I have customers that call me sometimes out of the blue, and they just need something done. But it takes some effort to establish yourself and put yourself out there. Let's talk about some of the ways you can do that. First of all, I'm doing this show, and I've made it a point every time I do the show to wear this T-shirt or some of my other printed shirts. It has my logo, has my company name. When I'm in the truck, I'm wearing one of these shirts. When I go walking through a truck stop, I'm wearing one of these shirts. I've given all of my drivers some of these shirts. Got a logo, got the company name. That's part of it. Now, I'm small time, only have a few trucks on the road, but this helps. When you show up, and this sets you apart, and it makes the customer remember who you are. I have the same logo on the trucks, and I'm trying to brand myself, brand the business. That's part of marketing. Now, even at my small scale, I have had customers call me and contact me because they recognize the brand. So the first thing you should do is work on your marketing. Because if a customer calls you because they think you are the one that they would rather have than somebody else, just because they've seen your marketing, you've already made the sale. They've already bought what you're selling. Now it's just a matter of working out the details. Just like the TA and Petro shop, you walk in and you just hand them your money. You don't need to know what they're going to do or how they're going to do it. You just hand them your money. Because they've marketed themselves. The reason I said that marketing is number one is because if you get the customers to come to you and give you the money based on whatever they think you can offer, that's less opportunity for them to say no. The earlier that you can make the sale, the sooner that you can close the deal and come to an agreement, the less chance the customer has to say no. If they come to you already knowing that they want you to do the job, there's less chance, less time for them to say no. The further down this list you get, the more opportunities the customer has to say no, and the more opportunities they have to the more of your negotiation, the more of what you have to offer in return has gone off of your plate. You've already given it away. They come to you, you have not offered anything to them yet other than what they already know about you. You have not made any promises. You haven't talked to them. They simply recognize your brand because of your marketing. They come to you. You haven't given away anything. You haven't shown your cards. They came to you. Less chance of saying no. Step two is sales. Step two is where you get to talk to the customer and you get to tell them and explain to them what you offer, your product or service, what you can do. You can explain the value and you can tell them what the price is. That's step two. You can tell them the cost. If you are really good at sales and you can explain the value and convince them that they need your service, you can skip negotiation and skip haggling. You can name your price and they'll pay it. It's like these shops that have a menu on the board. You walk in, they've already got the price, you just pay it. You skip over haggling and negotiation. So if you can close a deal in step two of sales, the sales category, less chances for the customer to say no. Then comes number three. Number three is the negotiation. Now, negotiation only happens if your sales technique failed. Some people don't think of it that way. Some people think that negotiation happens on every deal. It may, but if it did, that means you didn't sell it good enough. If you listed what you can do, you told them how valuable your services are, you got to the price. They accept the price. They accept what you can do. They're just not sure about something. Now you go into negotiation. If you've reached the negotiation stage, they've already said no twice. They've already said no to the marketing. Then they've said no to your sales pitch. They've said no twice. You failed at marketing. You failed at the sales. They've said no twice. Now you're in negotiation, and now you have to start giving away what you have to offer and hope that you can get something back in return that's not too costly. So, in negotiation is where you can start to lose. Now, a negotiation is just communication between two people, a give and take. You offer something that they would find more valuable, and in return, they might give you something. In many cases, in a negotiation, if your sales pitch hasn't worked, you have to give something away that's more valuable than they're willing to give back to you. So once you get past the negotiation stage, you get to haggling. At this point, they've already said no three times. No, I'm not sure if I want your services when I saw your logo. No. No, I'm not sure if your service is quite good enough or your price isn't where I'd like it to be. And negotiation, no, it's not quite what I want yet. There's been a give and take on the terms and the conditions and some of the services, but the price just isn't what I want. They've said no, and now you get into haggling. And haggling is where most of us start. We already start with three no's. Then we wonder why when you start talking about prices, brokers don't want to give. So we're haggling. And now all you can do is come down on your price. Now, there's a lot of overlap in all four of these categories. Sales and marketing intertwine quite a bit. And some of the sales techniques lead you into the negotiation. There's a lot of overlap there. A lot of the negotiation techniques could be confused with haggling and vice versa. There's a lot of overlap there. But the flow chart of these four categories is always in a downward direction, and the bottom arrow goes two ways, yes or no. And if you can picture a flow chart, each one of these boxes has two arrows that comes off, yes or no. Now, can you save it if it's a no in those other categories? Maybe. But then they're going to another no, and then another no. And then you get into haggling, and if they say no after haggling, the deal is done, and you didn't make it. So the earlier you can make the sale progression, the more likely it is to get what you want in the deal, the more likely it is to get a better rate, the more likely it is to have less of a headache with this customer because they came to you, they're happier with you, the more likely it is to have a win-win deal at the end. So I urge you all to get out there and start marketing yourself first. Learn how to do some sales. Don't rely on just outsourcing your sales department, which is what brokers do. Brokers are just outsourcing your sales department. Get really good at negotiation if you work with brokers, because if you can negotiate well, increase your rates, and come out with a win-win deal. And as that negotiation turns into haggling, understand that, I've said this before, I could program two computers, one to start at $1,000, one to start at $2,000. They can go back and forth until they meet right in the middle at $1,500. That's haggling. If you get to that stage after the negotiation, that's about where you'll meet, somewhere in the middle. You know you're not going to be higher or lower. They've already not agreed to your rate, or they've not agreed to some of the terms in the negotiation. Now you're haggling. But again, four chances for the customer to say no. How many chances would you like them to have? Start early and get out there. Make them come to you, happy to use your services. If they say yes at marketing, you've already made the deal. Now you just got to hammer out the details. If they say yes at sales, you've made the deal. Hammer out the details. If they say yes in the negotiation, you've made the deal. Customer bought it. Hammer out the details. If they say yes in haggling, thank goodness you saved it. If they say no in haggling, hang it up, move on. Just want to try to give you all a little bit of a different perspective on that. We got some more phone calls coming in. Let's jump to 815 area code. Welcome to the show.
Yeah, how you doing? Yeah, this is Mark. I just wanted to share a little bit about that consortium program, that other caller. The OIDA is a pretty reasonable fee. I don't know if you ever use them, but they got a really great program. They send you like quarterly for your paperwork, and they give you like a whole type of like CD when you get started and stuff, what to do and handbook. But yeah, they're pretty good. So.
And what you're talking about, what they include is the training. Now, if you
training, yeah, they give you the training and they send you like a quarter. It's I forget if it's quarter or semi, but they'll send you a you know, to keep your paperwork up to date and stuff like that. So yeah, that's through the OIDA.
Okay. Now, something that you just brought up, the training is actually required, and most people never take the training. But if you are – somebody has to be in charge of the testing process, and you have to designate somebody to handle that, and so that person has to go through training. Now, it's not supposed to be yourself. If you are the only person in your company, you're supposed to designate somebody other than yourself to administer the random selections.
Right.
And that's part of what the testing will teach you. And if you have employees, it could be yourself that does that, but you have to make sure that you go through the testing, because there are some pretty strict rules on how that has to work, how the administrator of the program has to handle it. And that's a good tip. So OOIDA, and I know NASDAQ is what he had mentioned. NASDAQ's got a pretty good program. That's actually I've got some experience with them. They have their class, the NEST class, New Entrant Safety Training, and part of that can be for the drug consortium. and they will put you through that training if you go to their class. If you are leased to a carrier or if you have a certain number of trucks, you can join without going to their class. And they have a unique program where they can train somebody in your company to actually do the collections. So they'll send out the test collection kits, the little plastic cups, the sterile cups and all the information. They'll put you through the training on how to actually do the collections, which is pretty unique. I haven't seen a lot of companies do that. But it's still typically easier to do that on your own or to go to a collection agency to handle that. But there are a lot of programs out there.
Yeah. Okay.
Yep. NASTC, the NASTC, National Association of Small Trucking Companies, and they're not a sponsor or anything, but they definitely have a lot of good programs. One of them, the best program they offer, and I would recommend this to everybody. I do recommend this to everybody. Anybody that asks me, their fuel discount program is unmatched. I have not found any fuel discount program that can even touch them. Doesn't matter if you're going through a factoring company or if you're going through some of these various fuel cards, ComData, Fleet One, if you have any of those companies direct, if you can apply the NASTC discount to it, it's unmatched. The only thing I've seen better is some of the mega fleets that have their own negotiated discount programs. But as a small fleet on your own, it's absolutely – there is a cost to join to become a member. There's they ask you to go out to their class, and they have some other programs that you can join and so forth. But the fuel discount program definitely makes it all worthwhile, so it's something to check out.
Yeah, I'm going to have to check that out. I didn't know about the fuel program. Okay,
yep,
great. Well, I really
NASTC
appreciate it.
The National Association of Small Trucking Companies, NASTC. And you can find them online. And I appreciate the call. Now, let me get to some of the questions. If you have any questions or comments about the stages of making a sale, go ahead and press 1. Love to hear. Some of the things I'd like to hear is, as a carrier, how many sales calls do you try to make? As a carrier, how heavily do you lean on brokers? And do you think of a broker as outsourcing your sales department? Because essentially that's what you're doing, but do you think of it that way? So if you have anything to add with that, go ahead and press 1. Now let me get to some of the other questions that we had to come in this week. One of them is, how much money do I need to get started if I want to start my own carrier? Kevin Rutherford answers this question on his show, and the answer is about 1 or 0 to 100,000, maybe 150,000. I'm going to go to 200,000. If you have anywhere between $0 and $250,000, you've just about got enough. And that's about the exact answer I can get. And that's if you're starting a one-truck carrier. And the reason I say that is there is a lot of risk in this business. I don't think anybody doubts that. There's a lot of reward in this business. If you start with a lot of money, certainly your chances of being successful is greater. Can it be done if you don't have the money, but you have a much greater chance of failure? You have to remember that one tire could end up costing you well over $1,000 if it's a road call. Mechanical breakdowns happen all the time. And let me roll this other question into this as well. Should I buy a new truck or an old truck? New trucks do have warranties, but you got to keep in mind that the warranties, and that's typically the reason people want to buy a brand new truck or a newer truck that's still under warranty, is that warranty they think will keep them from being broken down. It doesn't keep you from being broken down. It just means that the repairs are covered by the initial factory warranty. So you might not have any out-of-pocket costs to get the truck fixed, but you will still have that downtime. On the flip side of that, there's a big push for pre-emissions trucks. Pre-emissions trucks, most of them now, are pushing 20 years old. Most of them are well over 1 million miles. you might be able to get some pretty fantastic deals on those. I've seen trucks that are roadworthy, ready to go right now for under $10,000. You could make a killing with a truck like that. But I promise you that it will cost you a lot of money to maintain it. It absolutely will. Now, I have some of those trucks. I'm speaking from experience. I have a pre-emissions truck. It's getting old. It's got over 1,000,000 miles. It costs a lot to keep it up and running and maintaining it. The way that I operate my business and my business plan, it's my personal truck. It's what I drive. Obviously, I'm here in the office most of the time, so it's more of a part-time truck. If I was on the road full-time again, I would probably look at upgrading that. So there's a lot to consider between buying a new truck and buying an old truck, and that plays into how much money do I need. Doesn't matter if you have a new truck or an old truck. You need to be prepared to either weather the storm if the truck is in the shop under warranty, or be prepared to weather the storm when the truck is in the shop and pay for those repairs. Now, a new truck might be in the shop for very expensive items, emissions control systems, engine-related problems. Most of that stuff was very, very expensive. So luckily, new trucks are under warranty to cover that. You still have a substantial amount of downtime. Old trucks may not have those emission-related problems, but they'll have a myriad of small items that go bad. A lot of little things will go bad because they're old trucks. They're getting worn out. You could completely rebuild an old truck, but it's going to cost you a lot of money to be able to do that. There's a lot of things that go into that decision. Some other questions are, where are the best places to get insurance? We mentioned OIDA, we mentioned NASTIC, so let me throw those out there. Let me talk about the way the insurance industry in a nutshell works. Every insurance policy has to be bought through an agent. It has to be. By law, agents have to go through a lot of training to be able to sell the insurance. Even if you buy the insurance through the company directly, there's an insurance agent actually making the sale and handling it. So there's a few different ways that you can find agents to handle your policy. First of all, there are national companies that they cover. You can call the agents that handle companies and can write policies in every state. Companies like OIDA and NASTIC. Now, OIDA is an insurance company themselves, so they can actually write you the policy. NASTIC is not an insurance company, but they have agents to go to outsourced companies. Doesn't mean you might get a better deal through one way or the other, but they can work with multiple different companies. So I recommend, if you're looking for your first-time insurance, to get in touch with a national-level insurance agent, such as NASTIC, or there are several others out there. I also recommend getting in touch with some local, wherever you're at, whatever state you're in, get in touch with a local agent that understands trucking. Look them up on, you know, Google trucking insurance agents in your area. I will plug Brad Allen with Hadley & Leiden. Anybody that's in the Southeast, now Hadley & Leiden is one of the biggest and oldest insurance agents in the country. They can write policies nationwide, but they specialize in the Southeast. Now, Brad, the only reason I'm plugging him is he has been on the show with us in the past. So if you want to check him out, he is absolutely the guy to answer your questions. Even if you don't buy a policy through him, he is happy to answer the questions. His number is 888-679-8181. It's a good-sized office. There's a lot of agents in there, but I would recommend you talk to Brad directly. Insurance costs in the beginning. Typically, and there's no way to pin this number down. There's so many different variables in this. Number one is your driving record. If you have even the slightest blemish on your driving record, when you're starting as a new carrier, expect to pay a pretty good premium. If your driving record is absolutely clean, the next thing to consider is what area do you live in? Do you live in a high crime area? If you live in a state that has a no-fault insurance state, even if you live in a city versus living in a rural area, all those things can make a big difference. For example, I live near Orlando. Orlando, if you're familiar with the area, is right in the center of the state of Florida. And on the east side of Orlando, northeast side of Orlando, Orlando is in Orange County. Northeast side is Seminole County. My office is in Orange County. My house is right down the street is in Seminole County. Moving my business from my house to my office saved me several thousand dollars a year. It's literally less than 2 miles away. But because the address is in one county and not the other, saved a lot of money. Right, saved per truck, probably saved about close to $1,000 per year. Just moving 2 miles, moving the business 2 miles to a new county. That's how much variable there are. Now, if you go from state to state, county to county, city to city, there's so many variables, it's not even funny. Now, the other things that you have to look at are what what requirements does your insurance company have? State requirements does your what requirements does your state have? I already mentioned no fault, uninsured, underinsured coverage. Then, of course, the amount of coverage. If you want $750,000 minimum, or if you want $1 million minimum. Now, there's a broad range. I've seen brand new carriers in good states with as low as about $6,000 per year, which is a fantastic rate for a new startup company. I've also seen newer drivers or drivers with a blemished record in states that aren't so favorable pay well over $20,000 per year in your first year. Typically, for a startup, the insurance company will want at least 25 to 30% down. So if it's a $20,000 policy, be prepared to put at least $5,000 down. Most of the policies I see are coming in between $9,000 to $11,000 per truck. Be prepared to put down $3,000 to $4,000. Some companies may give you a discount if you can pay it all in one chunk. It might be something to consider. Some will finance it at no additional charge, but be prepared for that. Now we're getting close to the top of the hour. I think, let me see if we have any questions on the Facebook side here. If I can get it to pull up. And I'm having some slow internet. So we had a slow time getting it started because the internet was lagging, and now I can't get the video to pull up either. So that being said, I want to throw out a few books that I think everybody should get out there and check out. The first one, let me just throw out some authors. And you can find the books that they write because there's multiple books. But one of them is Tim Hopkins. He is probably one of the absolute best sales coaches that there are out there. I think working on your sales technique is probably the absolute best way. And most people will roll their sales technique into the negotiations. But if you can get out and actually do some sales, it's probably the best way to increase your bottom line. Another fantastic book is, and I think I said Tim Hopkins, it's Tom Hopkins. His number one book is How to Master the Art of Selling Anything. How to Master the Art of Selling Anything. So check him out. He has a couple of different versions on that on Audible. He also has a live recorded, it's about an hour long recording of one of his live presentations about his book. It's fantastic. I think you should check it out. You can also find him on YouTube. There's a lot of different sales information that he puts out. Possibly one of the best sales gurus that I've ever listened to. The number one book, if you haven't gotten into this at all, is by Dale Carnegie, How to Win Friends and Influence People. I think it's the number one book on how to build relationships, how to make a sale, how to talk to people. If you haven't looked at it, read it, check it out, How to Win Friends and Influence People by Dale Carnegie. Then to get a little more specific into the sales, check out Getting to Yes by William Urey, Getting to Yes. And then he has a supplement to that book called Getting Past No. I mentioned that there are 2%, 2 out of 100 cold calls will be a yes, which means you have to get past 100 no's. 100 people will say no before you make a sale. 98 out of 100 will say no. Be prepared for that 98 no's. Understand that you can always go back to those no's. Try again, getting past no. But learning the concept and learning that there's a flow of how a sale works. And if you can break the habit of just haggling or the late term negotiation, which essentially is all the details are laid out for you and you're just trying to hammer out a few give and takes, which ultimately is just extreme haggling. If you can get into actually doing sales calls, actually explaining to customers what you can offer that's better, they will pay you what you want. They will come to you. You don't have to go to them anymore. And I will leave you with one last thought on that. If you've ever been up late at night, 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning, flipping through channels on the TV, you come across those late-night infomercials. Of course, just the fact that the infomercial is up there is marketing. They're just trying to get their word out. But when you watch that show, there would be some kind of a product that you've never heard of, you can't imagine having a use for, and then half an hour later, you don't know how fast you can dial that phone because you need it. You have to have it. Those sales pitches are phenomenal, but it's all psychological stuff that they're doing. They're showing you how valuable the product is. They throw out a price, and you jump on that price, and then they say, but wait, there's more. And now you're going mad because it's so valuable to you. There's no negotiation. You've been sold at the sales pitch. You're sold. There's no haggling. You said yes at the sales pitch. Half an hour before that, you had never heard of this product. You didn't care to know about this product. You hear about the product, you listen to their sales pitch, and now you have to have it at any cost. And then they throw out some numbers that are irresistible, of course. There's no reason to negotiate or haggle over it. That's what we need to do as business owners. Sell your services. Explain why your customer needs you. Make them have to have you. You are the best. It can be done. Truckers are just a commodity. Set yourself apart and actually get out there and make some sales calls. Make it happen. It can be done. With that, I will leave you for the night. Thank you all for your support. Remember to dream big and aim high, strategize your plan, and earn your success. We'll catch you next week.